I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and we are building bridges to listeners over WPFW 89.3 FM DC and WBAI 99.5 FM New York, and over radio and internet stations across the country.
Let them eat cake. Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz claimed last week that the rich are being assaulted by the threat of unionization while firing workers for unionizing.
The Memphis 7, who have come up to give us a message about the kind of unionization organizing they are doing as baristas, and not just in Memphis, but across the country. And whom are we speaking with?
I am Beto Sanchez.
And I'm Lakota McGuan.
We are both baristas from Memphis that were legally fired for unionizing.
You folks across the country now have fired up the labor movement. Tell us about where you hail from and your experiences with Starbucks.
I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. You know, I grew up becoming extremely aware of, you know, poverty, being extremely aware of, you know, workers, you know, not being treated right, seeing what they would do to my parents, and then learning about my own grandparents who were coffee farmers as well. Whether it was there or whether it was Memphis, we see the same effects. It's a universal thing that's happening to workers, especially when they want to call us essential workers, especially during a time like COVID. They don't treat us like essential workers. They don't pay us like essential workers. And at the end of the day, they don't give us the respect of what we're doing for them. There's no way that a billionaire becomes a billionaire without exploiting work. And with Starbucks Workers United, we've been able to become part of something that's bigger than us, because many times people will tell us, why are you trying to do this to a part-time job? Why don't you just get a better job? Or, you know, very negative things. And I tell them, it's not about me at this point. It's about what's happening to people like me, people around me, because what's happening to workers here in Starbucks is happening to, honestly, workers everywhere. Everyone's understaffed. Everyone's underpaid. Everyone's beyond the threshold of the living wage. And at this point right now, we officially have, what, 40 stores that have unionized, and we have 230
Woo!
That are filing.
Yes, 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 40 stores.
And it's been fantastic. A lot of the times, these companies love to pretend that they care about you. They love to, they will be wearing Latino Lives shirts, Black Lives Matter shirts, Pride shirts, all of the sort. But at the same time, they're firing black workers in Memphis for unionizing. So at the end of the day, Starbucks is just protecting its image more than it's protecting its workers, and they don't like that. I'm Beto Sanchez. I was a shift supervisor that was fired by Starbucks, and here's my other fired coworker here, Lakota McGlon.
I'm Lakota McGlon. I was also a shift supervisor. I started working at Starbucks in December of 2020 and then was fired. Honestly, because of the union busting tactics, Starbucks brought in an investigator from partner relations to talk about why there was a news crew in the store the day after we first wrote our letter to the community. And they want to say that we had opened a closed store when the store was never closed. I was actually fired for allowing all of the above of what everyone else had gotten fired for to happen, because I was the shift on duty.
At this point, I've probably read 10 different reasons why we were fired. They're saying that we came into the store after hours, something which obviously didn't happen. They decided to write down in our termination papers very stupid reasons to fire us, because I believe they probably just needed to find something to fire us for, enforcing things that all of a sudden weren't enforced. I was personally fired. They decided to pick because I had a mask off while I was off duty. That doesn't make sense whatsoever. You know, they fired Lakota for letting it all happen because she was the shift manager in charge. There are steps in the discipline process. There's coaching, there's the written warning, there's the write-up. That's when they actually do something like firing you or doing whatever. They skipped all those steps and just terminated us right. None of us have to have any write-ups, nothing.
And what were the issues that you were protesting that led you to organize for the union?
These are issues that are affecting everyone at this point. I mean, to start with, when COVID was happening, there's a lot of policies that were in place to protect us in case there's outbreaks. They didn't care too much or follow their own policies. We have a COVID check and log where people need to sign in, write in the name, write in the date and time of when they're in, so that in case there is COVID outbreak, we know exactly who was at the store, what day, what time. The managers don't follow that themselves. We've had outbreaks multiple times. I mean, they're exposing us to COVID multiple times when this could have been avoided, there's been several times where I have an employee telling me, hey, I have symptoms, I have a fever, I'm not going to be able to come in. I told that to the manager, and the manager said, no, they need to come in regardless because they decided to keep exposing us to COVID. It's either that, it's the unsafe working conditions, you know, we have exposed wires everywhere. It's an old store. Unfortunately, our store wasn't renovated like much of the newer Starbucks looks like, so we still have old technology everywhere. We have exposed wires. The drainage is bad. We don't have hot water. We have outages a lot more frequent than we should.
Tiles cracked.
Yeah, just a lot of things that we've been asking to get fixed that they would bother not fixing. I mean, hell, there's a shelf on top of the chair in the back office that literally has, like, nails coming at the bottom of it. I mean, if anything, that's an OSHA hazard. But and speaking of OSHA, there's not even the OSHA labor posters that are supposed to be in every single working facility.
What's OSHA?
The Occupational Safety and Health Administration. It's there to protect workers in unsafe working conditions.
Lakota, talk about your experiences and what brought you to work at Starbucks.
I feel like many other people had seen the romanticized idea of a barista, and I thought, making coffee, it seems cool. I know, like, I gotta clean, I gotta do paperwork if I'm, like, in a upper level, but I needed a job, and I applied, and I was luckily given my job, and I originally started as a barista, then I was promoted to shift supervisor. Around maybe even like in December of that year was when Beto and Nikki first contacted the SB Workers United people up in Buffalo to get our ball rolling, because after our former manager, Amy, left, that was when things started to go downhill, because with our new proxy manager, we just weren't seeing what we needed to see that we saw with our former manager. Yeah. I can't sing my praises for Amy, but Beto and Nikki got into contact with SB Workers United. They sent, I know Nikki and Jazz were corresponding quite a bit. Some of probably the most stubborn people in the store.
What's SB Workers?
Starbucks Workers United. They were corresponding, and some of the most stubborn people in the store were also on side of, like, hey, I want to make this store better, because as much as I always talk about how bad our working conditions were, I loved my job. I loved meeting, like, all my customers, my coworkers, and some people do actually have that ability to just say, like, I love my job flat out, but there are those other people that need a job like this that's from a Fortune 100 or 500 company that provides, like, health insurance. And that's another thing that a lot of people were needing, because of premiums, I know, were pretty high for quite a few of our partners.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that they are now trying to risk, you know, taking away from partners, because, you know, that's dependent on how many hours you have. And now that they're trying to cut hours, sometimes in retaliation to unionizing, you know, that affects people's insurance, that affects their benefits, that affects their well-being. And it doesn't have to be that way, especially if we negotiate a contract so that that doesn't have to be a fear anymore.
After you start organizing, after the initial issues that you're talking about, what was the reaction of management? They didn't fire right away, did they?
Absolutely not. It only took 1 or 2 days until we started seeing management in our store. They were sending managers from other stores into our store, you know, having a lot of corporate people there, the district manager, even other district managers. And at some point, our regional director was at our store. It started with them trying to investigate us, trying to find reasons. And we warned this to the rest of our store. We were like, hey, at this point, you know, they're going to try to find something to pin on us to fire us so that they can start their union bust. All of a sudden, hiring a bunch of new people that were hired specifically to vote no for the union election. That was a big issue that we had at first, but thankfully right now we are very much all voting yes for the union. We've been all been talking to each other. It's that, it's been them posting a lot of anti-union propaganda all over the store, and us being as outspoken as we are, I would stare my district manager in the face, I would rip it off the wall, I would tear it in front of them, throw it in the trash, and go back my job, because, you know, they're trying to do all this while we're understaffed, while we have a lot of people to serve. And it's also them, you know, starting to screw with hours. We had an employee that isn't working there anymore because they were starting to schedule her for 2 hours a week, I believe. Was it like something ridiculous like that?
2 or 4 hours a week, yeah.
Yeah, and she's a student. She's paying for tuition herself. she didn't used to have that. Before they knew that she was for the union, she's had her normal 36 hours. All of a sudden, now that she's pro-union, they start cutting her hours drastically for no reason, and she didn't even give any change or anything.
Where does your consciousness come from? Why a union? Why do you think a union matters, and how did you begin to take up that issue, and why do you think others are?
My mom, she's in a union, and she was wrongfully terminated a few years back, and was, with the help of her union, she was able to get her job back. So seeing how that process went, that was always just kind of like a thing in my mind. It's like I already always knew that your union reps are your coworkers. The union, it's not a third party, it's your people.
Exactly. It's made by workers that know exactly what you need. And there, it's been many times in history, you know, there's things that we enjoy right now that were only done by unions. You know, that's why we have the 5-day work week and the weekend, because unions negotiated that. I guess if you go back a couple of years, working conditions were a lot worse. You know, that's why we have OSHA. We have people that were sick and tired of their kids dying at the sweatshop for stupid reasons, and now they, you know, we have mine workers. We have a lot of trades and disciplines that were able to set standards in today's workplace that were only possible by people working together, demanding better treatment, better pay. That's why we have some of the wages that we have and some of the protections that we have at this point.
Lakota explained a little bit where her consciousness comes from. Where does your consciousness come from? Is it coalescing with apparently other young people to the point of these small shops, which organized labor always said, no, we can't, we don't have the resources to organize small shops. You folks are doing it, and doing it across the country and winning. So
it's something that's bigger than myself. A lot of times people are just thinking me. It takes a certain amount of selflessness to be able to fight for other people. If there's something that the pandemic taught me, that Black Lives Matter has taught me, is that whenever an issue is not directly affecting someone, they pretend it doesn't exist. So, of course, when there's people that have much better jobs, much better treatment, you know, of course they don't want unions. Of course, you know, they don't see the need. Howard Schultz doesn't have to deal with wage theft.
Who is Mr. Schultz?
That's our lovely CEO. And it's people like him that obviously they don't see the need for unions because they never had to deal with issues that unions could fix. I've had many people tell me, like, oh, well, you shouldn't have to be doing this. Like, well, I tell them this, you know, what do you do if, you know, you started dealing with these issues? What are you going to do if all of a sudden you're doing the job of 5 people? How are you feeling when this benefit's getting cut from you? How do you feel when all of your, you know, nice benefits and stipends, all this are starting to be removed from you? You're being treated unfairly. All of a sudden, now they see the need for unions, you know, and that's kind of a selfish attitude that those people have because, of course, when it's not affecting them, they don't see the need for it. They want to be critical of it. But it's only whenever people are being treated unfairly in those jobs, all of a sudden, a union looks real nice. And this is something that we've been trying to tell everyone because it's with this power of selflessness with workers that it, I guess, is where our biggest strength is. While CEOs and managers are more worried about themselves and their profits, I'm worried about workers everywhere. I'm worried about baristas everywhere, and I'm fighting for them. I'm fighting for thousands and millions of people that are going through the same issues, that are struggling to put food on the table, that are afraid to take an ambulance because of the amount of debt it'll put them in. Of course, the people that don't need unions never have to worry about those things, but the people that I'm fighting for, workers everywhere, you know, these are issues that they fear every single day. And those are some of the things that I guess a union would be able to negotiate because, you know, with the things we've done in history, being able to get the 5-day work week, being able to get a lot of the things that we enjoy now as workers, you know, why stop there? There's a lot of things that we need right now that have been long overdue.
Oh, that's, yeah, like what?
I'll tell you what, the pandemic showed a lot of the company's true colors about what they care more, whether it's profits or whether it's their workers. Everyone's understaffed right now. Everyone's underpaid right now. And you can see it every single time. You know, I guess it comes from then on where you see the type of person you are. Whenever you see a store with a sign saying, there's only 2 of us, please be patient. I'm assuming that you're not one that's for unions. But whenever I'm seeing someone that, you know, understands, you know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I know what that's like. I have had to have 3 people do the job of 10 people before and not get paid anything extra for it. You know, it's that exploitation that people start to see, you know what, I don't have to put up with this, you know.
Well, this has really blossomed throughout the country. I mean, it started in Buffalo, and there were like 6 or 7 stores, and I think as of now, 6 have voted for the union, and one has not. And it's all over the country right now. Can you tell us Well, first of all, do you know what the most recent store is? How many stores in the country are unionized right now?
Right now, we just got 40. I believe there was a store in Virginia or... I'm not sure. But yeah, we're at 40 unionized stores right now. And right now, we have at over 250 stores that are filing to unionize. They're in the process of it. And that number has tripled over the last month or so. And I guess it goes to show, you know, the effect when people realize the power they have in numbers. You know, there's always more of us than there will be of CEOs, and that's something that people need to remember.
I feel like a lot of workers are starting to learn their worth as a working class citizen. Like Beto said before, there's always more of us than there are of them, and I think it's time at this point a lot of people are realizing that and standing up for themselves.
I'm interested in the issue of race and gender and sexual orientation. Nastiness, oppression, disparate treatment. I don't know if you experienced that in Starbucks, but if you did, can you talk about that? And the other thing, Chris Smalls, who's the president now of the Amazon Workers Union, had a jacket on at the rally the other day, and it said, "Eat the rich." And I love that.
Yep.
I'm consistently chagrined at the idea that when you say, but look at Schultz, look at the money he has. He doesn't know how to pull a lever for a coffee. Exactly. I have people that I represent in my area of work who have burns all over their hands and so on from working. Yep. As you can't see this, but as both Beto and Lakota show their hands to show their burns, they have no idea. So what I want to know is, are people incensed? Are they angry? Are they perturbed enough at this incredible disparity of income? You do the work. They, the CEOs, reap the profit. Is there something fundamentally wrong with that and something that unions should think about and address? Is that about workers' power? Is that part of a union also?
No, exactly. I mean, in terms of the treatment itself, you mean... Starbucks is a company that will fight tooth and nail to protect the image that they love to portray, that they care about different people. I mean, from the time that we've been working there, they decide to set up a lot of these networks and have a lot of cute T-shirts with Black Lives Matter or Latinos or transgender awareness, pride or whatnot. But at the same time, they're firing black workers in Memphis for unionizing. You know, it goes to show the disingenuity of what they want to show. Memphis itself is full of union history. I mean, we had the Kellogg strike, we had the sanitation workers strike. I mean, we have Nebreda, her grandfather walked with Martin Luther King Jr. on the same streets in Memphis that we walk by every single day. It's something that has been happening a lot of times in history, and time again, people like Howard Schultz are usually in the wrong side of history with these things. I mean, I couldn't imagine thinking to myself, you know, oh, I'm spending this amount of time fighting mostly college students with unionized. Most of the leaders that I've met that are union leaders, they're 18 years old, 19 years old, 20 years old. They're college students, and they're fighting this Fortune 100 company and a billionaire like not Jeff Bezos.
And winning.
Exactly, and winning. And that's something that, if that doesn't inspire you, give you hope, I'm not sure what will. It's just showing that something like this has been long overdue. In this economy especially, you do not become a billionaire without exploiting people. God, that got me worked up, not going to lie.
Well, good. Get worked up. Say what you want, and then tell us, where do you go from here, and how all of the people listening can support your efforts.
From here, we're just helping as many other, at the very least, Starbucks partners that we can. We've been able to be in networks with other baristas, and what customers can do if they still want to go to Starbucks, go to a store that has unionized or has at least filed to unionize. You can put in an order for a union yes or union strong, so that way, like, that barista who's like handing it off, they can say, "I have a grande latte for a union strong," and like it really helps like strengthen like the feeling behind the line.
We kind of get this rejuvenation every single time we see another store in a place we've never been to talking about the Memphis Seth, and, you know, talking about our story about what happened, because unfortunately there are a lot of cases like ours that aren't addressed, that take years to resolve, that don't get the coverage that we've been getting. But thankfully, we're being able to use that attention that we're getting to be able to shine the light on what's been happening. You know, this is something that's been happening for years.
What is the correlation between union organizing and issues like, and groups like, Black Lives Matter, Latinx Lives Matter, yeah. gay, lesbian, transgender Lives Matter, Women's Lives Matter? I mean, do you see union having something to do with all those things?
Oh, no, absolutely. One thing that a lot of these groups have in common is the treatment that they've all suffered from people that either don't relate or don't care about, you know, what they're struggling with. Starbucks, being a company as it is, they love to tout around about their gender-affirming healthcare that not only do they give, but apparently they decide to take away from partners because they're unionized. And we've had transgender union leaders that have that benefit taken away from them in terms of retaliation. And that just goes to show, you know, the true colors of a company like Starbucks. They love to pretend that they care. They do this performative activism. I mean, I'm sure you see all the companies, when Pride comes around, all of a sudden all the logos are rainbow. But as soon as July hits, boom, we're back to normal, you know? I have to ask for. I mean, myself, I am a gay Latino. And that comes with a lot of the things that are attached to, you know, whether, I mean, especially in the South, you know, people get harassed for things like that. But it's with that, it's, you know, with how I was raised enduring poverty, where I'm starting to see the connections between whether it's race, whether it's poverty, class, you know, issues like that. At the end of the day, when people put together themselves to organize, to fight, to be able to stand up against oppressors, that's when you start getting treatments. There's nothing wrong with a peaceful protest. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it doesn't yield the results you get whenever you decide to fight back. That was the difference at our store. That's why they fired us. I mean, we knew what billionaires need. They need their metrics. They need their money. So what we did, we picketed in front of our store every day until that line was fire us, because now their pockets are hurting. And it goes to show that whenever people do put together something to fight for, whenever people have something to fight for, they will take miles to it. You know, they will rally behind it. They will put it something that now they're seeing is, you know, important for people everywhere, especially when they overcome that me bubble, that selfishness. Whenever you start to realize that this is happening not only to you, but to people everywhere, you start to see how powerful a group of people can be fighting for a common cause.
What's the final message that for us to be able to support this extraordinary network that you all have built and your efforts to unionize, and to unionize for what? For equal rights and justice, and for worker power. Am I just saying that, or is that your thoughts as well?
Oh, yeah, it definitely really aligns with my thoughts. We've already had so much positive support from our local community and even across the country, hell, even across the world at this point, seeing that, like, those people support us and they'll say, like, hey, I'm wanting to unionize my workplace, and knowing that, like, we have that support is pretty solid.
Exactly. And it's something that I'm hoping can be able to inspire people, especially now that we're going to be reinstated soon. I mean,
wait, how are you going to be reinstated?
With progress with the NLRB, at first they were able to successfully deem that we were illegally fired. You know, we were able to tell them what's happening. They looked at it, and, you know, it was very blatant what Starbucks did to us. But not only that, the NLRB is pushing a court order now. They're going to be...
What is the NLRB?
That is the National Labor and Relations Board. And they are taking Starbucks to court because Starbucks is guilty. Yay. For union busting, legally and officially. So we're excited for that.
Is there a favorite chant that we can go out with together, and a final May Day message?
We love to say, what's disgusting? Union
all
busting.
All right, let's all do that. What's disgusting?
Union busting.
What's disgusting?
Union busting.
What's disgusting?
Union busting.
And also your website, and also where to contact you.
We are Memphis 7, or 901 Memphis 7 on Twitter, and you have a GoFundMe that will be able to help support the Memphis 7. You can look for it online, and it is the best way to be able to help us help workers everywhere else.
And just in case you didn't get it, the Memphis 7 are baristas who have been fired, and because they're principled, they're dignified, they're workers, and they're fighting for equal rights and justice and unionization. A message, Lakota?
A May Day message. Just know your worth as a worker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. Or what we always say, workers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains and a world to win. Exactly. We are totally honored speaking with you. You've excited. You fired us up. And here's to the power of the workers. They create all the wealth. We thank you for the inspiration, the hard work, and it's so great to see young folks who understand the power of the working class and the potential of unionization to empower the working class.
Thank you so much.
Lakota McLaughlin and Beto Sanchez.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.